improvised televisionary activist show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So yet again, we avert disaster by gathering to consider. Hello, KPFA. Are you hearing me? Yes. We hope so. Yes? Okay, that's great. Okay, very good. Yes, it's all quirky and wonderful. So we are here to honor the choreography of Venus and Mars, who beckon us to join in their dance, that they be wedded within us all, that we may be agents of the outer wedding. And yes, let's put big things on our altar of desirable mystery to evolve beyond war. So I will be bringing in some moments our wonderful return of astro-mythological ally colleague Daniel Jamario. In a few pertinent moments, but I am about to, in March, you know, head out to the home realm, Northern California. Many things are brewing because there's so much active in the sky story. First, on March 16th, that will be the seventh of seven Uranus-Pluto squares resonating back to the 60s, and that's when I will open up the Compassionate Trickster Mystery School Telecoyote phone web thing to everybody at 6 p.m. Pacific time. All of these events will be listed on coyotenetworknews.com. On March 20th, I will be at Open Secret, magnetizing the return of Harmonia. That's Open Secret, 8 p.m. reservations 415-457-4191. On March 21st, I'll be at Commonweal in Bolinas, and that will be a wonderful sort of short talk, and then a wonderful conversation interview with Michael Lerner for the New School. That will be webcast, and the attendance and webcast are free. On March 26th, Tea Party with Mary Waldner. More details, we might be able to add a few more people. On March 28th, I go to Santa Cruz, 7 p.m. in Santa Cruz. Again, all of these events are on coyotenetworknews.com. March 29th, Trickster Training Tea Party in Santa Cruz, 3 to 6 p.m. Again, all of those things, more details, more fun things, because we're calling it, you know, it's the serendipitous synchronicity, comedic marriage of Mars and Venus, beauty trumps tyranny, blessing poker, seven of seven squares, equinoctial tour. There we have it for the moment. That'll do. Okay, more than perfect. I mean, we are magnetizing the return of Harmonia via pragmatic mysticism, democratic animism, and applied divination. Remember that Mars and Venus have a daughter, Harmonia, who awaits our animation to bound onto the world stage. So there we have that. So, more than perfectly, for this choreography of Venus and Mars, we are welcoming the return, the synodic return of astro-mytho ally colleague Daniel Jamario, keeper of the Mars-Venus guiding rhythm, the visible Venus-Mars conjunction in the Inanna Dumuzi Rapunzel saga is strong as today the sun conjoins Neptune at the Girl with a Bugle, calling in a new tide of cultural energy. Daniel's website is shamanicastrology.com, and he is joining us from the Philippines, where it is early in the morning on Venus's Day, Friday. Welcome, Daniel.
Oh, what a fabulous introduction. Thank you, Caroline. Great to be on the show again with you.
Oh, it's so fun. I'm so glad and delighted, because there's so much hopping up and down, you know, before us that is heartening. And also today, Washington, D.C. legalized marijuana. Woohoo!
So, I noticed that. That's pretty amazing. Well, I do follow the news from over here.
Right. Sacraments of kinship. You can't smoke in public. You can't buy it. You can't whatever, but you can smoke in your home and grow inside your house, whatever it is. It's basically, and they overcame the Mars no Venus grumpitude of Republican colonial people trying to impose their will in Washington, D.C. So that's all good. There's so much brewing in the news, the mythic news as well. And so we're coming up on Persian New Year with an eclipse and an equinox, and Venus and Mars, their first of three conjunctions this year, was at the comedian degree, 1 plus Aries. We love that. And beauty poker, and redefining gender, so there's more room for everything. And Loretta Lynch, you know, all humans are befoibled but mythological, will probably be the first woman, the first black woman attorney general, a general, in this country. So we go, we'll take that as mythological. All right, so I did listen to your fabulous podcast, so useful, Daniel, but wherever you want to join in, we have a lot of you know, gathering the powerful myths to take into, you know, yes. action. So,
well, maybe I'd like to maybe establish a little context here, since the synodic cycles, the Venus-Mars cycle, from this perspective, are not really that. The general community is not so aware of what they represent, and what to me at first, the first thing to understand about it is it's placing the story of these planets into a larger context. There's been too much of an overemphasis on individual charts, you know, in the last 1,000 years, and we've lost in a lot of ways the way of placing our individual stories into a larger story, a larger cultural context over periods of time. And the synodic cycles allow us to do that. So we have a Venus cycle of about 584 days and a Mars cycle of 26 months. And they have a pattern. They have a particular rhythm that they have as far as their dance. And there's only three patterns that happen every 6.5 years. The three patterns, and the one that we're in now is an extremely remarkable and amazing one, which has been many mythic stories projected onto. The one we're in now is when there is a very short but dramatic meeting of Venus and Mars in the evening sky, which is what we've just had, been pretty remarkable over the last few weeks, and it's still happening. And then that's followed approximately 9 months later by a Venus-Mars conjunction, the final Venus-Mars conjunction in the morning sky. It's actually a time period of 3 or 4 months where Venus and Mars are dancing together within 10 degrees.
Again, because you're so good at intimate experience, everybody can see after sunset, you can see Venus blazing in the west. And then there's Mars, just a little above, fainter, but still there. Anyway, so it is available.
And the reason why they are different, so different in size and brightness, is because Mars is on his way to the underworld, on his way into the portion of our observational experience of going below the horizon, blinded by the light of the sun, the way the ancients saw it descending into the underworld. Venus, who has more recently come up from the underworld, is now dancing brighter and more radiantly into the evening sky. And so they're separating, and that's really the key to the Dumuzi Rapunzel version of the way ancients had projected onto this visible celestial dance, is that Mars quickly disappeared after their meeting into the underworld, and Venus then dazzles us for many months into the evening sky, and then after a period of time. They will actually come together in the in the morning sky, and then they have a long dance together in the morning sky, 3-4 months. This one coming up has two exact conjunctions. And by the time we get to the one in November when they come together, we have a gestation. We have 9 months. There's of the conception and the gestation. And this actually also happens in one of the other patterns also, the Great Saga. We call this the Dumuzi or the Rapunzel Saga. But the saga, the Great Saga, is the one where there's a long meeting in the evening sky and a very short meeting in the morning sky. But it's the same thing. There's about a 9-month time period. Like there's the conception that happens, and then there's the birthing that would happen 9 months later in the morning sky. One last quick point on this, since we're looking at this from a visual perspective, less important to the ancients would be, oh, what does the computer or what does the ephemera say is the exact conjunction? What's more important would have been, oh, we can hold up our fist, and the fist will cover the two planets, and they're together. You know, so it's like you can see the planets dancing together, and they come with, and virtually every time they come within an exact conjunction. But the fact is they're dancing together for like within 10 degrees, in this case only one lunation. The moon comes through and separates them, as it were, and that's how the Rapunzel and the Moosey thing happened. You know?
I know, but I actually like the moon presiding at their wedding on last Saturday, just for the fun of it. But yes, there's
No, that's the old story. In fact, that's part of the other larger context here, which is the ancients, for their own political and economic agendas and sociological agendas, would have projected certain stories up there. The Rapunzel had a story, had an agenda. The Moosey and Anna had a story, had a particular agenda. We have an opportunity to project a different mythic story,
yes,
onto the exact same scaffolding.
Exactly. And I think that's part of right now, again, whether one follows astrology or not, just it resonates in our bones and blood that, you know, to take the beauty of very old things and bring them alive in a fresh new way is very, that's the considering. And I love what you said, reminding me backstage that Mars will descend and not be visible anymore, going to the underworld April 17th around there, depending on your latitude.
Mm-hmm.
But it reminds us, you know, of what we both love, which is myth, fairy tale, the kind of more customized myth, and detective novels, you know, the more, even more localized, but they were ways in which culture passed on its actual science, really.
Yes.
You know, as we know from the Rapunzel story that we might go back to, but, you know, what I'd said to you backstage, and I always love this, that when partly when Inanna comes up from the underworld, you know, one version of the myth is, you know, again brokered by her wonderful Sukal, her best girlfriend, and the deal is cut that she can come back up as long as she sends down a replacement, and the 2,500-year-old poetry says she gets back, and everybody was concerned and worried about her except for her boyfriend, Dumuzi, who does not rise from his throne and is wearing his fine, uncreased clothes, and she says, everybody was grieving except for you, and I have to send on a replacement. I wonder who that will be. All right, your turn.
Exactly.
And it goes with the myth that the gods, when Hercules was being two Mars, no Venus, and destroying the world, the gods sentenced him to go to the underworld to learn knitting and weaving, you know, to weave back the fabric of creation that his uninitiated Mars had been sundering. And so I like that. You know, anytime somebody's grumpy in the world, we go, Cheney, Netanyahu, you know, in the underworld knitting tea cozies. There they are. Okay. I just wanted to...
The imagery that I like to use also is more of a maybe a shamanic imagery, which is that it's when the male will go into the Okipa, into the sweat lodge, into the Sunday, do a Sundance, basically to go through a rite of passage, which is to gain humility, and to grieve, and to do it for the people. That I also project onto this portion of the cycle where Mars goes into the underworld.
Perfect. Yeah.
Another factor here would be is that if we go back 5,000 years to when the Inanna Dumuzi story was actually danced and it was ceremonialized, it was by the people every 8 years at the spring equinox. During that particular time, in the evening, it was actually the great bull of heaven that was descending into the west, below the horizon, so that actually the reason for the Inanna ceremonial was the morning. She went to go to attend the funeral of the great bull of heaven, which is actually mourning the end of that age, the end of the age, which is probably the time period in history when the matriarchy was at its greatest power or strength. When I say matriarchy, I'm not referring to Gilanic culture of collaboration, but where there was a real emphasis really on matrilineal or matriarchal kind of thing. And so there's a lot to mourn there, actually, if you think of it, that whole age was coming to an end, and you can see it in the sky, that the great bull of heaven was setting in the west. Well, here's the really wild thing, is that at this time now, Mars, if we watch Mars in the sky between now and the end of April when he descends into the underworld, he is passing by the stars that are the very stars of the fish and the ram, which is exactly the star pattern of when the spring equinox has been moving through the constellations, representing the height of the patriarchy and the dominator paradigm. In fact, he will be passing by the two main stars of the Ram, Sheratan and Hamal, just prior to his descent into the underworld. So we've got this exact same theme of, like, in a sense, mourning or grieving the end of the age, which is really extending our view of what grieving and mourning is, you know. I mean, as our friend Martine Pertel says, that the only way Americans can ever even get close to grieving, changing their hearts, to changing their attitude, is to learn to grieve. You know, and so like the grieving is like, what have we wrought? You know, what has this particular age delivered upon to us? And, you know, whether it's men who benefited, they have, you know, well, we have to let go, or whether the entire culture that seemed to be attached to certain things, they're grieving. That's another level of grieving other than obvious one.
Well, I think Antonio Machado's poem starts, you know, what have we done with the garden entrusted to us? And I think that's perfect. Yes, we're in complete telepathic accord between Washington and Northern California and the Philippines. Yeah, because Martin says, for lack of grief, we go to war, that he'd forgotten when he came back to this country after 26 years in Guatemala, that Americans know so little about grief. Well, there was an authentic moment of grief after 9/11, again, beautiful altars, but it was kidnapped and forced into servitude to the unimaginative, you know, up to no goodness of war. But we want to get it back, because I also wanted to pitch to you and our team, Martine Pertel made a joke. It's a wonderful joke. He was talking about the necessity of courtship, and also how Americans, and especially American men, he said, not me, have forgotten courtship. And he said that courtship will help humans to heal their relationship to the earth. And then he said, what passes for courtship in American males is, look, I made a golden statue of myself for you. Anyway, so that's Martine's joke. it's very cute. So this courtship about, you know, actual equality of Venus and Mars, it was interesting as they got married, you know, late Saturday night, just now, the first of these. But the news was full of, you know, gender tolerance, gender ambiguity, I mean, all kinds of things. And it's this week that the new old fairy tales are being published in America, in which, you know, wonderful woman, I have it here somewhere in my notes, you know, but she's talking about the scholarship of Shoenworth, and these are much more gender equal fairy tales, gender equality rising. She says, where else but in Shoenworth, the scholar, do you find a boy who works in the kitchen? He's like Cinderella. You never find boys in the kitchen cooking in the Brothers Grimm, and bad dads too, before it was all bad mothers, you know. Anyway, so there's the dredging from our collective wealth is also what you're doing, you know. We're pulling up, going, you know, there's a lot more equality that got covered up that's rising now. And I know in your online lesson that idea of, you know, opportunities for Venus, Mars within us all, opportunities for evolving patterns of relationship. And you'd mentioned a book in which it went through, you know, partners and polyamory and whatever, and the book had finished by going, and none of them work, you know. But you'd said maybe all of them can work. Can I toss it to you there?
If I may, the other factor that ties into this and why I actually said that, was that in the synodic dance, the way of looking at the Venus and Mars cycles from this observational perspective and the 584-day Venus cycle and the 26-month Mars cycle, what they do is they place an emphasis on one specific archetype. I mean, it's sort of giving the tone, the overtone of the time. So if we're looking at the Venus expression as an anima expression, as a feminine principle within men and women, beyond gender here, then the particular sign that is being emphasized by this cycle is actually Capricorn. And for Mars, the one that is being emphasized is Libra. This entire Mars journey, which was was indicated by 8 months of Mars being in Libra back when the cycle began. So it's the dance between those two. Now we need to reframe this. What do these two things represent? We had this discussion, I believe, Caroline, last time I was on your show about this reframing of Capricorn.
Yeah, I love that.
To be that of the elder, basically the female elder, the goat mother, I guess you could say, or the grandmother wisdom. Not patriarchal Capricorn, but Capricorn as the circle of grandmothers that are making the decisions for the benefit of the generations to follow.
I like the circle of goat mothers. Wait, pause for a moment here because the Venus in Capricorn cycle, we understand that from what?
When Venus rises as morning star,
right,
to begin the synodic cycle, and this is something every culture around the planet recognized. The cycle began when she came up in the morning sky, and in this particular cycle, when she came up at that point, it was in the sign of Capricorn, as she does every 8 years. And so the Capricorn goddess is the one who is on the world stage. And I love that element of it, particularly if we get out of the patriarchal understanding of Capricorn as being a particular way. I mean, it's elder wisdom, particularly as understood in matrilineal cultures. And then meanwhile, Libra becomes the dominant imagery for the whole 26 months because that is where Mars was for 8 months, and when he rose in the east at sunset to actually begin this particular cycle, the equinoctial rise of Mars. So it's the weaving together of these two archetypes, and good grief, I mean, you talk about the animus, universal animus, the masculine principle, and now being working through the sign of Libra. It's everything is looked at in a different way. I mean, it's about collaboration. It's about not that extreme yin or extreme yang, but it's about having to be able to look into the eyes of another person and mirror yourself accurately to know more about yourself through another, not a dominator a version, but where it's genuine collaboration, or which I like to say conscious equal partnership, which I believe is what the masculine principle is going through at this particular point, and through also getting guidance from the elder wisdom of the matriarchy or the grandmother goats.
I love the goat mothers. I'm happy with that. Because we again, our frame that we can all feel, you know, regardless of astrology or mythological literacy that we are aspiring to restore, but you know, the world itself we can perceive as being destroyed by uninitiated Mars, hyper yang death frenzy, going, we're gonna put, you know, mackerel genes in this tomato because we're unsupervised Mars and we can. We're gonna, you know, lay waste to this. We're gonna disrupt peace stocks. We're gonna follow the initiatory, the toxic faux initiation of skull and bones, in which young men to whom we outsource financial and political power actually go through a toxic mimic black magic ritual of cutting off feeling. They go, this sense of feeling and kinship, it is weak, and I cut it. And they do that anyway. So the Venus Mars is, you know, it is Venus that initiates Mars, and I think we do want to support and encourage, you know, yes, we can be grumpy about many things, but, you know, Obama just vetoed the XL pipeline, and we've been working on that for a while, and he's been working with that, and I think he deserves that we put a cloak of guiding earth wisdom and protection around his shoulders for that, because no small thing, and, you know, protect him from... Anyway, so we go, yeah, go little Mars and Virgo guy Barack Obama over there, and Venus in Cancer.
Caroline, in my revisioning of how to look at Capricorn and Libra, you know, Capricorn in the feminine and Libra in the masculine,
mm-hmm.
We do, of course, have to take into account the fact that if we look at this historically, that the shadow or the more normally understood negative or critical ways we could look at both of those archetypes are going to be trying to maintain their power too. You know, so the forces of hierarchy are going to be in great resistance against those who might say, wait a minute, Capricorn is really not about that. It's about a proper administration of resources. It's about sustainability of the planet. It's about what works really, not what works for the quarterly profit. There'll be a battle between those particular forces, and the same thing with Libra. I don't know about you, but what I notice these days is that particularly in astrology conferences, and in astrology circles, the sign that gets bashed the most these days is Libra.
Really? I guess I've been missing an action. Why would alleged astrologers do such a thing? What is their rap?
Poor Libra, or you know, codependency, or
tedious,
or you know, defining yourself through the other in a weak way, or you know, rightly so. There's a really good emphasis these days on autonomy and sovereignty, but what gets pushed under the rug is the fact that it is in fact possible from the place of strength and autonomy, genuine collaborative relationship between the masculine and the feminine. You know, I always like to invoke Avalon and the Merlin, you know, a way of collaborating the best of the masculine and the best of the feminine to create a round table.
Well, since the Sun today is at 7 plus Pisces and Neptune dreams and vision is at 7 plus Pisces, whose image is, you know, a girl with a bugle calling in a new tide of cultural energy. Yes, since you brought up King Arthur, and I want to bring up High John the Conqueror of the South, about both of them, you know, the Grail legend didn't end, it was put on pause, and we want to hit play, because at the what passes for the end of the Grail legend, you know, which was an experiment, the round table in which spiritual people were engaged in political governance for the protection of life, but all the really hip spiritual people go away. Arthur goes to go take Pilates classes in the underworld with the girls. Merlin goes off with a hot fairy chick. But the idea is that, you know, it says Arthur did not die, but he goes to Avalon to await the world's call at a time when we need wise, positive Mars to dance with wise, equal, positive Venus. And we go, I think there's a bugle. Everybody's got a bugle, regardless of temporary gender, age, and race assignment. Now would be really good. And the same with High John the Conqueror in the South, wonderful trickster redeemer. Fabulous. Read Zora Neale Hurston's fantastic essay on High John. Same thing. It said that he did not die. He goes to go live in High John the Conqueror root, a fabulous root, you know, to await the world's call. And I love today, Daniel, that, you know, we can, all of us, everybody in mind's eye, or literally, or if you're in a car, you know, grab a bugle or, you know, your fist as a bugle going, you know, calling in, which I think is a Venus dynamic within us too, is when we don't know even what to do, Venus says, just invite in what can handle this, you know, whatever's truly best for everybody, come on in, you know, I mean, because Venus is the magnetizer inviter, yeah?
And the Libra archetype at its best is also wanting to collaborate, to bring others in, to create a circle, to create the table. To me, the archetypes of Libra and Capricorn are the ones most present in the Arthurian tale and its fullness and richness of the attempt to have good principles and to have it be collaborative with the original table, which is 24 places on the wheel, and I see it as 12 men and 12 women.
Ah, yes. And, you know, and again, it's so silly. I have missed all those astrology conferences where people were dissing Libra. I mean, equality. We're moving into this time of equality, and after our very short, fabulous musical break that is imminent, that we will be playing from D.C. here, we have the wonderful Rubab from Afghanistan that we played last week, but again, very wonderful, because I just learned from visiting ZamaniCollections.com and meeting the patriarch that Bab means gate and Ru means soul. So the Rubab, a 5,000-year-old instrument, one of the first stringed instruments that we're about to hear, you know, it means soul. gate for the soul. And we go, we love that. But equality, meaning there is no sign, there is no anything that is better or worse than any other. I'm willing to go, you know, chakras as well. Everybody equal. I mean, all of it. And that any teaching or philosophy or radio show or astrology or science or anything is valid only to the extent that it guides people to their own equal autonomy. And so there we go. So we're going to take a very, very short break. We will be with this wonderful music. It is by living in Northern California, wonderful Afghani musician Humayun Saki, and this is the song musical piece Josh. This is the wonderful Rubab, which means gate for the soul. Here we go. Back, teammates, the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our fantabulous guest and guide to the Venus-Mars cycles is Daniel Jamario, joining us from the Philippines. And that musical break was Humayun Saki, Afghani musician who lives in Northern California. Hello, wherever you are. Introduced by increasing Afghani friends, and we go, and that is him playing the rubab, one of the oldest stringed instruments, maybe the oldest stringed instrument in the world. My new friends say 5,000 years old. Ru means soul, bab means gate, soul gate, and we go. So that is the positive musician creating beauty, Mars and Venus dancing. What do we want to reward in men? We go, yes, we want to reward beautiful music like that that is rousing about Venus and Mars bounding on stage together. I love that piece of music. Now, Daniel, we get to further Kahoot, but wasn't that a fun, rousing piece of music?
Oh, I totally love that style of music.
It's again from war, you know, from the war in Afghanistan. We excavate and give rise to the diaspora of beauty. Wherever there's Mars, let there be Venus. Wherever a land is troubled by war, let's dive deeper for the beautiful Venus Inanna myth and again, beauty poker. But maybe you can go wherever you want. But here we are in the second half. Oh, I was just going to say, and I'm going to bring this up, and you can disregard it if you want, but we are heading into the seventh of seven Pluto-Uranus squares that Mars and Venus are journeying to join this big party. If there's anything you want to, if you want to go there now, that's great, and if you wanted to go somewhere else, you feel free.
Sure, we can. The other thing I wanted to try to remember to bring in, since you brought up the issue of, you mentioned chakras.
Yeah.
Would have to do with how that plays in to this particular conception point and how it plays into what happens in the fall when the birthing happens.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure to come back to that. But as far as Uranus, Pluto square, you and I both are of the generation where we had the opportunity to experience directly in our youth the Uranus-Pluto conjunction.
Of 66 to 69, yeah.
19. Yeah, I mean, what a wild and amazing time. I celebrate that time pretty much every day of my life. The seventh square, bringing to an end the exact, seven. It's pretty rare to have seven exact squares in any Uranus-Pluto cycle. Just continues to keep bringing up those themes in both positive but also very challenging ways. What I'm looking actually forward to is when Jupiter in Virgo reconnects to the degrees of where that Uranus-Pluto conjunction was to begin with, which is really part of the birthing point that we're looking at within the Venus-Mars saga, where Venus and Mars coming together in the fall. Well, then we have also Jupiter moving through Virgo, and we'll be tracing, this path will be tracing over where the Uranus-Pluto conjunction was back in those years in the 60s. So it's like expanding that to a point of what Rajar calls crisis in action. You know, you're reaching a point in the square where there's forks in the road. You know, and it's like you're being forced to go one way or the other. You can't detach from it. It's not something that you get to sit out. You go one direction or the other. It's not like you come to the fork in the road and, oh, you take the fork. No, you have to be really...
Well, that's what Yogi Berra said. Yes, if you come to...
I know, that's where
right.
You know.
Take it.
Come to the fork of the road, take it. I guess we could say that's more Neptunian approach. But this, this is really, really critical to be able to see what it is that's at stake with those seeds that went in the 60s. We can come back to this, and I'm sure it might be a... go ahead.
Well, I was just going to also just bring in, you know, a wonderful late ancestor, Reuben Snake, who said, here's a little bit of Native American wisdom for you. If we don't change our direction, we're likely to end up where we're headed. As a negotiating skill for everybody going, here's the story, here's where we're going, do you like that? Then we got to come back and change the story. And just for our ever-expanding team of dynamic listeners, each planet represents a quality of intelligence, and the outer planets, in a sense, represent qualities of nature's evolutionary intelligence. So 1966 to 69, Uranus, change, upheaval, trickster, ingenuity, disruption, experiment, and Pluto, death, rebirth, you know, come together. Now, they are squared. It's kind of like a new first quarter moon. Now is the integration, as Daniel was suggesting, of that. How do one story is here's death and dominance taking so much life down with it. Uranus, trickster, nature's evolutionary resilient ingenuity, a culture of reverent ingenuity, that humans be humbly willing to be guided by nature's evolutionary ingenuity in a partnership, also known as trickster.
I can suggest one other possible, this is the way I always like to look at that time period with Uranus-Pluto together in those years, which is maximum Uranus and maximum Pluto, okay? So maximum Uranus, I call it the double blowtorch effect, where Uranus is blasting people up and out all the way, I mean, to the celestial, to a place of Promethean unbelievable possibilities, a freedom from the known, where you've never gone before, up and out all the way, and then Pluto, down and in, the blowtorch all the way down into the depths, into the depth of the psyche, but also the depth of the underworld, the depth of the shadow, the depth of the hidden material. I mean, everything that we haven't brought awareness and consciousness to, you know, both directions simultaneously.
That'll do. Although it's also, you know, this awakening, and it was, you know, I guess everybody, you know, people born 1960 to 69-ish around, you know, you are the 60s. Those of us who are teeny, teeny young people in some ways, but who lived through it, you would go, yeah. But it's a resonant field for everyone to draw upon. And, you know, there's a million ways. I love the way you described it, too, because that was the rocket to the moon and the thing and the and also the underworld shadow and Charles Manson the same time as the landing on the moon. And the, but there was also... For a moment, you know, it was like the Arab Spring before it went bad. Right. There was a sense of kinship, like, hey, you, yes, hitchhike safely, mm-hmm. yes. You know, a positive tribal sacramental with a wink connection that is still resonant and that I refuse to have rewritten out of, you know, a retroactive dementor mm-hmm. rewriting of history, because it was mm-hmm. about kinship and fellowship. And we want to bring that wants to come back. Mm-hmm. Now
that was real. That is not a fantasy. I lived it directly. You know, the power and the feeling of like driving in a car to the Washington Moratorium, and
yeah.
you pass people on the road, and it's like you have no idea who they are, but you knew they were your clan, and you knew they were your brothers and sisters, and we were all in it together.
Right. Exactly. I probably saw you. And again, that sense of, you know, and again, on a mythological level, it can be even bigger now, because, you know, a girl with a bugle calling in a new tide of cultural energy lets everybody, you know, see, you know, everybody's best self showing up. And that is not limited to humans. It's like, look, there's the wolves coming over the hill, and there's, you know, mythological figures. And here's, you know, Kuan Yin surfing in on her dragon with, you know, in meditative repose, but with one foot forward. And look, it wants to be a festival of the gang's all here. You know, every piece of poetry or mythology that has ever brought out the good in humans, it's here to be, you know, available, you know, to be, well, as dance partners, I think, really, because we cannot do it by ourselves, humans. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. And then I just want to put out one fun thing and toss it back to you, Daniel. But I like, you know, proffering provocative precepts. And one, you know, to be snookered into polarity is to be inadvertently obedient to the reality police, also known as the overlords or the dementors of doom or whatever. So I think part of that dynamic is, you know, nature, when conflict comes together in nature, nature creates spirals. So again, you know, as we've been doing for a long time on this show and everywhere in the world, but, you know, let us not be snookered into polarity, which doesn't mean being a compromising weenie. It just means the spiraling dance going, ha-ha, you know, and the beauty poker. I see your act and raise you one. Here's even more beautiful. Anyway, so
yes.
So I like that idea that maybe we can transcend polarity going, rah-rah, because remember, wonderful, really learned druid John Michael Greer says, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something. Right, 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 right. And you will only
What I could interject definitely to just, you threw that out at me, I'll throw this back at you.
All right.
Is that when Mars is in the underworld during the 3 or 4 month time period beginning in April, you know, after he passes through the stars that represent the age of Aries and the age of Pisces, those very stars, as he goes into the underworld, virtually the entire time period that he's in the underworld, he's within the stars of what the Lakota call the sacred hoop. It's the hoop of creation. It's the place of the galactic edge. It's the place in between the constellations of the Bull and the Twins. And it's interesting that right in the midst, pretty much right in the center of his underworld journey, is where he is right below the Twins, right below the great Roman numeral 2 in the sky that stands right above where souls come into incarnation through that gateway, through the galactic edge, inside the hoop of creation. And so basically that is the place of the entrance of the souls where they have to bypass the duality gates. You know, it's like if you want to enter into this particular realm, you go through the gates of duality and polarity. And the way you go through those gates of duality and polarity will basically both describe our journey as well as what the intention of the journey is, which is to go beyond that, to transcend that, to incorporate that, to not be dominated or overwhelmed by it. So Mars is going through that astounding initiation whilst he is in the underworld. And I hope he gets the teaching because when he comes out of the underworld, who does he encounter? He encounters Venus rising as morning star in her radiance in the sign of Leo. You know, so we've got basically the Leo goddess coming up to greet the newly initiated Mars in the Mars symbol coming out of the hoop of creation in the underworld, hopefully having had that initiation at the gateway of duality right below the twins, and he comes out and encounters this radiant Amazonian solar feminine, probably the greatest symbol of the solar feminine that exists, which is the Leo goddess, is the creator of a woman who, with the courage to be creator for its own sake, to make it up in a new way, and hopefully she will have an initiated collaborator for that dance.
Excellent. And then just with a brief aside, because of course in Mesoamerica, Venus is a guy, Quetzalcoatl, and part of the dynamic as we head into the 2016 elections, Venus disappearing into the underworld was understood in Mesoamerica going up, time to redefine leadership, because Quetzalcoatl is a pretty good leader, and then he gets a little remote, and then Tezcatlipoca, the Lord of the Smoking Mirror, whispers bad intrigue into his ears going, you're getting old, but drink this balche, mm-hmm. as all in power are proffered. Drink this balche, this wild drink, it's just what you need. And Quetzalcoatl drinks it and does terrible things and violates all taboos and sleeps with his sister and, whatever, and has a wild bad night and wakes up in the morning with a terrible hangover going, I have really messed up. And he sails away. Again, Mesoamericans or a mythologically literate culture would not go all harumphy. It would be, let us now redefine leadership. And then the return of Venus would be like the, I think this is a cautionary tale for all of us. It was a quirk of historic fate or something, yes. that it was, Cortez shows up at the moment.
Oh, my God, yes, that's what I was going to mention, is that I went to that place. I went to Tula, which is actually this pyramid structure that was specifically built for the ceremonial that would have to do with Venus disappearing below the mountain, going underneath the earth, and then showing up as morning star. And they would be looking toward the east as Venus came up in the morning. This is the same. This is actually not the same one as this. This is only the short disappearance, the 7 or 8 day disappearance where this is sex change. It is this one. I got confused. It is this one. It's where this is, basically there's the rising of Venus after 7 or 8 days. And what happened was, they do the ceremony. They're doing this great thing. They built this huge pyramid, hundreds of people there are doing great ceremony. Yes, there's going to be the return of Quetzalcoatl. And on that very day, is when Cortez sails up to Tula.
Right. I think this is a lesson for all of us. Right, exactly. Not all synchronicities mean you should do it. Right, exactly. Going, curious coincidence, but it doesn't necessarily mean, this person showed up when I needed this, so therefore I'll hire them. Or No. It's just interesting at first, and then very important.
We have to be careful about what stories we're projecting.
Yeah.
The power of who's working them. Also, the same thing happened in Hawaii. They did the Great Lono Festival, and then here comes Captain Cook, and he's actually going around the big island the exact same direction that Lono is alleged to have, and he shows up, and they think it's the great return of Lono.
This
on the day they were doing the ceremony.
Well, this is very important, actually, because the Dementors of Doom are very tapped in, known or unknown, as kind of agents of up to no goodness. Remember, George W. Bush, began bombing Iraq on Persian New Year, on the exact vernal equinox, the day most sacred to little lambs and ducks and babies and life, bombing, you know, and the Dementors, the Bush administration especially, I don't think they were doing it on purpose, but they were inhaling all of these powerful, beautiful days for up to no good. So it behooves us, O team, you know, that we animate the desirable in these generously proffered patterns, lest we leave them by default to the Dementors of doom. Anyway, so from Cortez to Captain Cook to George W. Bush, you know, because Dementors will slide right in there to inhale the beauty and kidnap the beauty of the beautiful story and make us mistake mere befoibled humans for actual agents of divinity. And we don't want to do that. We want to throw that mistake into Pluto's cauldron, blah, 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 blah.
I think that August is really a critical time because it's in August that Mars slowly comes out of the underworld. And then it's in the latter part of August when Venus rises as morning star radiantly in the sign of Leo. And they first set eyes on each other at that point, you know. And that begins their four-month dance leading up to the birthing point in November. My thoughts go toward the strength of the god, the fact that god would go through good initiation, have a good sun dance, would have a great okipa, they would do excellent knitting and sewing, as you put it, and then come up and to be able to actually have a phenomenal relationship, which would actually be in harmony then in the Rapunzel tale, where when the prince gets back together with Rapunzel, she had twins, and her tears come out of her eyes, and his blindness is restored. I mean,
his blindness is alleviated. Yes. Right, no, that's good. That's good. No, that's right.
Six in the morning. You get on a wrist, and I don't duck you.
No, you're doing great. It's six in the morning where Daniel is, bless his heart, in the Philippines. It is her tears of compassion that fall into his eyes that have been blinded when he was thrown out into the wilderness and landed on thorns. As all leaders in many mythologies, they get thrown into the wilderness to go, it is her tears that heal his blindness. Beautiful, very beautiful. Again, all of these beings, regardless of our gender, you know, what is it to be a Venusian heroine that's available to, again, everybody in our increasingly fluid gender assignment, you know, going, but remember, it is the Venus heroine, the trickster who is interested in liberating everybody and the land and even the tyrant who has hardened his own heart. As you say, cosmology inspires ceremony, says Daniel Jamario, and all of human history behind us, we go, yeah, it's meaningful. That's really beautiful. And I would encourage people to find William Irwin Thompson's great essay on Rapunzel of the lost lore of women and plants.
Other individual that is much, much forgotten and is one of my heroines for the 20th century, the one who actually most inspired what you just said about cosmology inspiring ceremony, is Herta von Däschen. Herta von Däschen, the writer of the ideas in Hamlet's Mill.
I have not made my way through that book, but do you recommend it?
Oh my God! It's okay. The cornerstone book for anyone involved in the kind of astrology that that we're into, with the mythic dimension that understands the great cycles of history and how people project mythic stories onto the cosmology. And unrecognized genius, Herta von Däschen.
Excellent. I will do it. We welcome her now. All exiled people of merit, you know, because I think that's part of the Neptune dynamic of everything that's been shamed or exiled or dissed or undervalued, but said to be where each person and a culture's soul lives. Is being welcomed back. Welcome, all exiled of great value. Come on back in our psyches and in the world. And in our remaining fun moments, well, we can go anywhere we like to, but I want to bring it into now. As Mars, right now Venus is a little bit ahead of Mars. Mars is going to pass Venus, I think, and then join the big dance. On March 11th, Mars conjoins Uranus. Now, there's a description. We can disastrously describe things going, oh, terrible volatility and blah, blah. But more importantly, there's a guiding choreography, you know, again, to reinvent, to liberate Mars from the unimaginative prison of war. You know, so, and then as we go towards the solar eclipse, I love the solar eclipse on March 20th, right before the sun enters Aries in the vernal equinox, that we can fill our magic backpacks with all powerful imagery and dreams to reanimate in some way. You know, and then Venus also joins in the cahooting, and we go, oh, it's very exciting.
The way it looks in the sky is that Mars each night is going lower to the horizon, and Venus is very rapidly gaining distance between Venus and Mars, and so within a few days they're not even going to be within 10 degrees, and Venus is just going to go higher and higher and higher up into the evening sky, while Mars goes closer and closer and closer and closer to the horizon. I want to mention here is that before he goes into the underworld, he will go through 4-degree Taurus, 7-degree Taurus before entering into the underworld. And if anyone has those degrees anywhere in their chart, I mean, those are the stars that represent those two stars that are in the bull. I'm sorry, in the ram, that have to do with that passageway to the grieving the end of the age of the patriarchy.
Right. And then also the sidebar is something I derived from your online lecture. You said at age 32, at age 64, at age 96, it's Venus and Mars duplicating where they were when we were born. Is that
right? Yes, and also the way this would be seen in the sky, this very same dance that we're seeing in this season, in these signs, repeats itself every 32 years. So that this very same enactment with the same signs, the same saga, the same conception point, the same birthing point, is something that repeats every 32 years. So and that's something worth looking at historically. If we had time, I had wanted to talk about how the chakras, because the pattern changed this year. It's different. The last 100 years is different than it was this year. The conception point in Aries, first time that conception point has been in Aries in this particular saga. Before it was in Pisces. It's also happening in the third chakra gate of the Venus cycle. So it really has to do with the will, with intending, it's hard for me to imagine this last week as being a more powerful time since I've been an astrologer for setting intentions, for conceiving, even for those that actually want to actually have a literal baby, you know. But as far as anything else we did want to conceive of, this time period, most powerful, third chakra, Aries, Venus and Mars together, Capricorn and Libra. It's the story is huge, and I think we should be with it. You know, get guidance from it, collaborate with it.
Right. No, exactly. No, that's right. And I'm just going to segue a little bit. The power of gathering at this time. You know, so much woofing before us. You know, whereby we can conjure, you know, cultural hijinks as a liberating dynamic. And just to do the rundown, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, March 16th, Telecoyote open to everybody. March 20th, Open Secret, 8 p.m., Magnetizing the Return of Harmonia. You can find reservations. You'll figure it out. It's on the website. March 21st, I'll be at Commonweal in Bolinas. That's a free event. We'll also be live webcast. March 26th, the Tea Party with Mary Wilder. March 28th, Santa Cruz, 7 p.m. March 29th, Trickster Training Tea Party in Santa Cruz, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. All right, back to you, Daniel. We are on our way out, but thank you so much for getting up early, although you do that anyway, bless your heart, to join us from the Philippines. And let us continue to cavort and cahoot, oh, great colleague and keeper of these important
cycles. Oh, God, I hope so. Absolutely. And by the way, if I might say, shamanicastrology.com.
Yes.
If people want to know what it is we're all into. And we've been collaborators now for a long time, and I hope it continues in a great way, Caroline. Thanks for having me on.
In wonderful perpetuity. Thank you so much. And thanks always to Alex Drewinskis in Washington, D.C., and to our wonderful Skookum board up in KPFA. KPFA Berkeley, thank you, thank you, thank you. Again, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. And we will reconvene next week. I'm Caroline Casey. This is the Visionary Activist Show. Over and out right now. Everybody grab your bugles and call it in a new tide of cultural energy. Thanks again, Daniel.
Bye.
Bye.
Why should the black man in America concern himself, since we've been away from the African continent for 400 years, 300 or 400 years? Why should we concern ourselves? What impact does what happened to them have upon us? Number one.
For news, information, and analysis about Africa and the African diaspora, tune in weekly on Mondays at 7 p.m. to Africa Today with your host, Walter Turner. Africa Today is your source for being up to date on Africa and Africans. Mondays at 7 p.m. Africa Today on your Pacifica radio station, KPFA 94.1 FM.
And it is almost 3 o'clock here at KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF.